This is CICK News. In the ever-evolving field of botany, plants of coastal British Columbia stands as a monumental resource, poised to replace its predecessor that debuted over 30 years ago. Authored by renowned botanist Jim Pojar and his collaborators, this new guide not only updates the foundational knowledge of plant life in the region, but it also reflects the significant changes that have shaped our understanding of these vital ecosystems. As Jim told me in our interview on the picnic table in his beautiful backyard, the past three decades have seen substantial shifts in plant taxonomy, driven by advances in DNA barcoding and a heightened awareness of the impact of invasive species. This new guide aimed to present up-to-the-date information on plant habitats, distributions, and conservation statuses, ensuring that readers are equipped with the latest insights into the flora of coastal British Columbia. With over 500 pages of detailed descriptions and stunning photographs, this guide is designed for a broad audience, from seasoned botanists to casual nature enthusiasts. Jim's commitment to educating others about the intricate relationships between plants and their environments shines throughout this work. As he notes, the most effective way to learn about plants is through exploration and plain curiosity, which makes this guide an essential tool for anyone eager to delve into the rich botanical tapestry of coastal British Columbia.
Okay, the new book that we've written is to replace the original Plants of Coastal British Columbia that came out over 30 years ago. And a lot has changed since then, so we wanted to update the information, also include more of the flowering plants, or the so-called vascular plants, the ones that have conducting tissue, and then because a new guide incorporating the taxonomic changes, the changes in names, the accumulated information about habitat and range, because that's been changing, the impact of introduced invasive species, because they've really come on in the last decades, and in some cases the status of the plants in a conservation sense, you know, whether they're secure or threatened or rare, rare and endangered, because that has been changing as well. And then sort of overarching everything is climate change, especially climate warming. And we tried to incorporate that into the book as much as possible. It's pointless to try and predict what's going to happen.
Right, yeah.
But it's already happening. Yeah. The impacts of resource use, and in particular forestry, are everywhere in this coastal region. And so we discuss things like vanishing old growth, big-treed old growth, and the industrialization of the forest landscape, converting huge areas that once were covered with forests that were, you know, 300 years old, and now being replaced by young forests that aren't allowed to get older than 70 years, because they're managed on a short rotation. So that's a massive change. Even though it's still a forested landscape, it's not the same sort of stuff. Well, another advantage to a new book, not just updating an old one, the photographs are so much better now. But the photographs are fabulous. In fact, that's one of the big accomplishments of our work over the years in working with the Forest Service, I'm talking about Andy and I, we were able to clue a whole generation of foresters into plants and what they could tell them about the ecosystem, along with just foresters, there's the public.
Over three decades, this field guide has become an essential companion for naturalists, educators, and enthusiasts alike. Like Sibylle Huesler, a former professional forester and research scientist whose work addresses the dynamics and diversity of plant communities and ecosystems. I met Sibylle at her lovely home in Smithers to discuss her review and the way that she's used the book as a naturalist and professional. When the book came out, Plants of Coastal British Columbia,
1994.
And you wrote a review.
Yeah, I wrote a review. And, you know, I knew most of the authors, so it wasn't, like, independent. I don't remember if someone asked me or if I just thought, oh, I should write a review. I think that's the case. Uh-huh. We have a group, a botany group that goes places, and we went to Haida Gwaii, and the book had just come out. And so I just took this book on the trip. We all go and we botanize for 3 or 4 days. And so we were all over Haida Gwaii. And normally I would come with this whole suitcase full of all the old plant books that you needed to figure out what was out there. Because, let's go around here. Because there wasn't one book.
Yeah.
And it was just wonderful. It worked out great. So I guess I wrote a fairly positive review.
Yeah.
And that stuff you find was in here, which the other books, you'd get a small book and it would just cover the main really common stuff, which we all know anyways. Mm-hmm. The ones that are harder, you wouldn't be able to do. Or then you would bring all the volume 1 to 12. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you couldn't take them out in the woods with you. You'd have to do it all at night. So, great book.
So yours is a well-worn copy, or is this your second or third copy?
This is my well-worn copy.
Very nice.
Because I haven't worked on the coast that much. I ended up being more of a boreal person.
I've found that, this is me, the most effective way to learn was to go out with someone who already knew and ask, keep asking questions. But if I was on my own, I'd take a picture, take a little piece of the plant, bring it back, and then look at it carefully. But we enlisted Lee Joseph, or Stiawat, who's a Squamish woman and an ethnobotanist, knows a lot about, you know, coastal indigenous uses of plants. And she contributed a lot. And then Jamie Fenneman, who's a younger taxonomist, botanist. He lives on Vancouver Island. So those two are in their 40s.
Yeah.
At least.
They're the young bucks. Yeah. Did you set up to write for it to be as... How many pages is it?
So just before credits. Including the glossary, 508 pages.
Well, that's the maximum. Or 520, I would say, is the maximum. I can still call it a field guide. But the thing about books are they have a certain gravitas compared to the online offerings. But nowadays you can go online and identify plants, and in the past you couldn't. Yeah. You were stuck with books.
Last thing, and because this is an audio format, if you wouldn't mind being as descriptive as possible, but what is... a plant that you, when you notice it, makes you excited around here, when you're walking either up in the subalpine or even just around in forests near here, what's a plant that you want to kind of shout out and have more people pay attention to?
Well, if you're on the dry ridges, I love seeing the sage buttercup, which is a little thing that usually grows in the Okanagan, you know, or Cache Creek, the dry interior, but it occurs on some of these dry, rocky, southwest-facing ridges with the Rocky Mountain juniper.
And then I got the full Pojar experience of identifying a plant incorrectly and getting a brief lesson on the cellular function and identifying features of a lovely little number called Sage Buttercup.
Yep. So oh. It's got those shiny petals.
Oh, that's not dew. That's just they come out waxy like that. Like it's...
They actually have a arrangement of cells that acts like a mirror.
Oh.
And it reflects light like that.
What's the purpose of that?
Attract pollinators.
Oh.
And it's the source of buttercup, the common name, because old folklore has it that if you rub it under your chin, it'll turn your skin yellow.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
Have you tried?
No, I haven't.
Want to give it a shot?
The kids have.
Yeah, for sure. Purple Mountain Saxifrage. Oh, very cool. And you can find that here?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
That picture is from Brian Boru.
Oh, okay.
The mountain up by Hazelton.
Okay. Very cool. Do we have Monkshood?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
But it's not a different name. It's Monkshood. It's called Monkshood.
Yep, aconitum.
Is that also belladonna?
No, but it's poisonous like belladonna.
Yeah, okay.
But it's Monkshood because I have a picture here.
Bring it out. Good thing we have such a handy field guide.
Local groups like the Bulkley Valley Naturalists rely on it for their coastal trips, demonstrating its widespread appeal and utility. However, the botanical landscape has shifted in the past 30 years, with the emergence of invasive species and significant changes in taxonomy due to DNA barcoding. Many outdated names have been retired, reflecting a growing cultural sensitivity and commitment to accuracy in plant identification. The guide remains a vital tool for this purpose, offering practical demonstrations on identifying plants through their characteristics such as branching patterns, stem colors, and inflorescence, which Sabil showed me. By organizing plants by family, Pojar's guide enhances pattern recognition, which makes it easier for users to navigate the diverse plant world of the Pacific Northwest. So this updated field guide not only honors its rich history, but also embraces the evolving understanding of plant biology, ensuring its relevance for generations to come.
So we're a local club that's existed in the valley since the late 70s, and it was started by Rosamond Pojar, who was one of the contributors to this book.
Mm-hmm.
Related to the main author, Jim Pojar. And she started the club, and it's been going ever since. So they've changed a lot. What's happened is people used to identify plants visually, and they would look at it, right? Morphological features. And they would figure out, oh, this is closely related to that because the branching is the same. And then they could figure out the lineage of the plants, right? But now it's all done with DNA and RNA and whatever. Oh. So it's all done in the lab, barcoding, DNA barcoding and all that. And don't ask me about that because I don't know anything about it. Very specialized work. And so what they found out is a lot of times things look the same. They aren't this closely related as they thought. So they rearrange the tables of, because with plant taxonomy, it's all based on evolution. Started out as one plant and then it diversifies over time, right? Mm-hmm. And you try to trace that back. So that's really changed. Mm-hmm. And when that changes, they have to change all the names. So that's a big one. The other thing about changing the names is things are no longer appropriate. So on our West Coast, a lot of the plants were called Indian this, Indian that. Right. Those names have been changing. And there was also a tendency to name them after just like towns and smithers and so on. Mm-hmm. On some old white guy that just happened to be the boss, and you name the plant after the person. And, or, you know, a botanist that you're trying to honor. So they're trying to get rid of those kind of names that are associated with some old white guy. So that's happening. That's a big change, I'm sure. And then the type of information. But changing of abundance of species, you're going to have to ask the authors about that question. Sure. If you take a botany course, you will learn about plant families and the hierarchy of it.
I haven't taken a botany course.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a whole different approach if you're not. If you just do it yourself,
and I
am not a person who spends a lot of time on keys and taxonomy. I have a good visual ability to detect a difference. Oh, that just looks different, right? But I don't really pick it apart, what it is I'm doing. I'm just getting this mental image, and I'm sure we all do that with mushrooms or whatever. You know, our brains are designed to do that, to figure out what's good to eat and what's not good to eat, and things like that.
The book is Plants of the Pacific Coast from Alaska to Oregon. It's a brand new, fully up-to-date plant guide by Jim Pojar, Andy McKinnon, Lee Joseph Stiawat, and Jamie Fenneman. It comes out in August and was published by a new Canadian publisher of beautiful, illuminating, and accurate science books called Can Science Books. Thank you to Jim Pojar and Sibyl Huesler for giving me their time and taking me on little mini tours showing me how to identify plants that live around me. Today, I'm speaking with the chair of the Finance Committee about the Budget 2027 consultation process. We'll discuss how the committee is gathering public input, the types of issues being raised by British Columbians, and how these submissions will be evaluated and communicated back to the community.
Well, hello, everyone. My name is Paul Choi. I'm the MLA for Burnaby South Metrotown.
So I read the letter that you had sent to Smithers Council, and I just wonder, how does the Finance Committee ensure that things like diverse voices and perspectives from British Columbian are represented when you do this budget consultation process?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's one of our sort of key priority, to make sure we hear diverse and sort of unique, all the voices that we may not necessarily hear more regularly when we're in Victoria. And that's exactly why we're traveling to all parts of the province, including, of course, Smithers, so that we can hear from people from different corners of the province and make sure that we capture all the different needs of the province and the communities around. So the submission to present in person or over Zoom has passed back in March and April. So we are doing the travel. So we will be in Smithers coming up on June 18th from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. But right now, if you miss to submit to present at that time, there is an opportunity for you to submit an online written submission until 19th of June.
Excellent. Thanks for clarifying that. Now, what specific topics or issues do you anticipate receiving for the most public input on during this consultation?
We do this every year, and I was fortunate to be the chair last year as well, and then this year again. And we have already done consultation in Victoria over Zoom, in Vancouver and Burnaby. So we have heard from literally everything from the gamut. We heard from local governments about their needs, education issues, different industries like businesses, unions, community groups, as well as individuals with their specific issues that could include like environments or something that's specific to their community as well.
Mm-hmm. How would you describe the process by which public submissions are evaluated and then prioritized? And then how the committee also plans to communicate the outcomes of the consultation and the feedback that you get to the community and to the greater public?
Yeah, no, thank you for that question. So it's a all-party bipartisan community. So it's made up of government and opposition MLAs. And after we receive all the submissions in June, all the information we received, including the written submissions, will be consolidated. It'll be summarized and categorized in different themes. And we will sit down for all of July to go over the issues and the submissions received. And then we will see what we all feel and vote on it's we want to ensure that it's priority of the British Columbians for the next fiscal year because this is consultation for the budget 2027. We want to capture and balance how we can help and have the best positive impact. At the same time, what is actually reasonable and reasonably doable within the next fiscal year. So after we gather all those, that's where we ensure that we have what we feel is the best and most priority for the people, for the British Columbians. And we say this is one of the most democratic process we have, where a lot of people might have questions about the government and how legislative assembly works. And this is where we can also hear directly from the public as well as to what is their biggest concern, and what they want to see all different parts of the province. So this is where we can gather all that information, have that direct dialogue, we can ask questions, they tell us what they want to see, and figure out actually what is the truth and what is the normal British Columbians really want to see and want to focus on. And that's what where we can see and re really a good rare input that we can gather from the public that we may not normally see.
Absolutely. Mr. Choi, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thank you so much. I just want to quickly say to the listeners to submit written feedback before June 19th, as we said. You can go to our website, la-bc.ca/consultations. And of course, there's all the information you need there. And please share the information. I know some of you may not have the opportunity to submit for the actual in-person consultation that's happening, but we also encourage everyone to come and watch as well. It's open to the public.
Thank you to Paul Choi, MLA for Burnaby South Metrotown, and this year's Finance Committee Chair. If you would like to attend the Budget 2027 consultation public hearing in Smithers, you can do that on Thursday, June 18th from 8 till 10 a.m. in the Cascade Room at Prestige Hudson Bay Lodge in Smithers. CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.